Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron. I want to welcome Marie to the studio.
Morning, Aaron. Te Maria, whangaroa.
So, we're going to talk.
We are.
And we've talked about what we're going to talk about.
We've talked it through.
We've worked it out. So, the thing, there's a couple of things that I've been looking at recently that we're going to use as the launching pad for it. One is, it's finally dawned on me after all this time about how we're making political decisions, decisions about how we vote when we're in a state of anger. And I know a lot of people say, no, I'm reading the policies, but okay, you might be, but I think you're pretty rare. There is a tendency on the right to use, they know that if they create a kind of, like this has been well discussed as a strategy, you make people angry. It tends to put off people on the left more than on the right. But it also can be used to, if you make people angry or fearful, you can get them to, that can affect their vote. And I'm thinking about, we know instinctively that you shouldn't make decisions when you're angry, but we seem to, especially this election, there's a lot of anger around, we're making those decisions. And I was reading a book, which was not a political book, it was by Dr. Kerry Evans, who was the guy who advised Richie McCaw in that era of All Blacks how to handle pressure, and then they went on, because everything blew up in their faces in the 2007 World Cup, they came back in 11 and 15 to win twice in a row. And I mean, reading his book called Perform Under Pressure, and he talks about, he uses red and blue, like you get in the red or the blue mindset, and the red is when you're in fight or flight mode. And he talks about the narrow focus that you have there, and he has this, the last thing I was reading was about this, if you're in that point where you feel you're getting angry and you're just going to react, he's got this phrase, step back, step up, and step in. So you step back, and immediately that slows you down, and then you step up is so you can get a perspective. This is my understanding of it. I might be mangling it a bit. But you get a bigger overview perspective, and stepping back also allows you to see other things that are quite important that were just gone from your mind because you were so narrowly focused. I mean, that's what that does. Like fight or flight mode gives you a narrow focus for a reason, but it doesn't help you make decisions. So I liked that, step back, immediately you take a breath, step up, get the perspective, then you can step back in once you've worked out what you want to do. And I just thought that was, I'm not saying we have to go to the, I'm not advising to do that in the polling booth, but I'm just interested in what happens in our heads when we get, when we see red, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
That's the thing. And having a strategy is so good. Because I've had times in my life where I see red and I'm just like, just trying to use willpower not to do the stupid thing I did last time. Right?
I love it.
Yeah. And it's hard.
Please don't repeat.
Yeah. I don't want to do that again.
Yeah. So I think what you're saying there is having a strategy is puts us on the front foot, you know. So it prepares us and we can then practice our strategy. And perhaps we don't give ourselves permission to practice strategy like we would give ourselves permission to react really badly because we don't think about how we're going to respond. We just respond, and often it's out of an emotional reaction. So having a strategy around subjects and situations that could cause us to go offline or react in a way that we wished we didn't, helps us to negotiate those situations where we don't feel like we're disempowered by our reaction and then have to try and come back from that, which can be really difficult too.
I guess sometimes being angry does empower you. There might be a time when that response is useful. Like
I think
if you're
a righteous anger. You know,
also, if you're under attack or something, like...
Yeah, when you feel that you're defending yourself and you know why you're defending yourself, or you have you're informed by something and you want to share that, but then, you know, we need to be able to agree to disagree well, and we don't do that very well. We tend to disagree and then try and force the other person to agree with our disagreement, you know.
How often does that work, would you say?
Well, it doesn't, because we end up getting into conflict, and then it just ends up being this barrage of information that gets thrown out between two people and nobody is really listening to anything. So you're not going anywhere, you're just offloading a whole lot of tension really in the moment.
Yeah.
Nothing's really happening except for causing a whole lot of anxiety and probably discord. Yeah, learning, and I like what you said about having a strategy. It's something that I've done in my life and have had to fall back on many times, a strategy in situations, so I don't say something that I, you know, that probably is going to disempower me in some way.
Yeah.
Because it's the wrong thing at the wrong time. But unfortunately, all of us people out there that carry trauma in us, we don't articulate well, and the expectation that we're all going to be on point in how we respond in times of stress, or, you know, there's a big expectation that we are all going to do a good job, and we don't. Most of us carry something, and so we react when we are triggered. Yeah.
It's funny, if you see someone who's been angry and going off, and you know them well enough to go and grab them and kind of turn them around and face them another way, you see that the look on their face is like someone who's been looking down a tunnel in the dark, and you pull them back out, and they're like trying to, and they're re-getting their bearings again.
Yeah. That's when somebody's really gone offline, Aaron.
Yeah.
And
that's that narrow focus that you get.
Well, that can be dissociation too, when a person isn't actually present any longer. They've gone
right,
offline.
And
so what you're describing there is that I would consider that to be quite traumatic, that the person is definitely left their thinking, you know, not in their logical mind any longer, and don't know what to do. But I think when in these situations, when we're talking about political ideologies and how people vote and things like that, you know, it can be historical in us too. You know, if your family has voted a certain way and it's been ingrained to go that way, and there's, I think, family conditionings that come through when we vote that can be quite disturbing in families when you want to do something different.
It can cause a lot
of tension, and again that word discord. So let's talk about strategy maybe. What do you do? Because I know that this time of the year people, well, where we are in our politics, people are stressing. Yeah, there's a lot at stake, isn't there?
Especially the people who get involved in campaigning, and there's lots of people who are campaigning. They get on somewhere on the internet, mate, leaving comments in various places, and I can see now. If you look at them, you can see that, like, they're not just talking about what they've read in the main article. Like they've written something that they think is going to help push their agenda,
or the
group that they're with, their agenda. So people, everyone's out there strategizing about how I can, and they're so caught up in the fight.
You know, my question.
So we're using strategy in two different ways here. Now we're talking about the strategy, the political strategy. But what we're wanting to, I just mentioned political strategy, but what we want to talk about is a strategy for pulling back out of the anger and entering into political stuff from a place of anger.
And,
or anything else. I mean, it doesn't have to be politics, for goodness sakes.
And you talked about a strategy that came from that book, Perform Under Pressure, and it was from us discussing that it brought up how I would use a strategy I would use in counselling, which is the naive inquirer. And the same thing that he's done, it's a strategy that is it's kind of like a picture you get in your mind where he's given you a thinking process, step back, right, step up. And what was the other one?
Step in,
which I thought, well, that's interesting.
So you can go back in. I think in my interpretation is once you've got your perspective and you've worked out what you want to do, then you can step back in.
And that's a strategy to try and put in place before tension is there. So what he's trying to teach is to give these guys something to land on, because we have nothing. We're not informed, Aaron. We're not told how to deal with stress or deal with situations in the moment, and so we're not informed as humans on what to do.
I think our experience growing up is when there's a stressful situation, whoever the most powerful person is forces the other person to do what they want.
Pretty much.
And that's how the stress is revolved. Resolved.
Yeah, and so
which is not a resolution.
The more timid ones or the more introverts step back and don't talk, or let the extroverts or the stronger ones have their say. And so it's a typical view of society, really. You get the strong ones who speak out, and you get the ones who are quieter and perhaps won't speak out.
Or not just saying anything. And it's a power thing too. Like,
yeah, and so we don't. And yes, quieter ones don't get heard, and the louder ones do. You know, so strategy, yeah. So in a counselling situation, I would use the naive inquirer, and that's just a picture of a nave. If you could put your mind to a nave, which is in the old days, you know, in the castles, and they had the jokers, and they had the wanderers who kind of walked around from town to town or village to village. They were the knaves, the naive inquirers. They were people who were travellers. Yeah. They weren't really involved in anything. They just travelled around. And so they usually wore a cap with a feather in it, and they had a cap sack on their back. And you can imagine them with the curly shoes in the front, you know, and their kind of skirty things that they wore, and more like the Robin Hood type look. So naive inquirer.
And not a threatening.
Not non-threatening, yeah. Just going through life. Being curious and being interested are the two key words in that. So a naive inquirer is curious and interested. And so using this kind of analogy or this metaphor is about... One thing you've got to notice is when your body or when you start to get stressed. And so noticing when you're starting to get riled up about something and then using these things in that moment. And that's the hard part, is bringing something in that's going to help you respond differently than you did have normally responded.
Mm. Well, this book, Perform Under Pressure by Kerry Evans, has got a lot of different stuff in it, and he tries to make it easy to remember. But this was the easiest one, and he actually wrote, as soon as you think the step back thing in your mind,
yes,
then everything else will follow quite easily from there.
So what he's done, how I would say that, he's put a circuit breaker in there.
Yeah,
so
thinking, to me it feels like a good one. Maybe it won't appeal. It may not appeal to other people, I don't know.
Yeah, but you can find circuit breakers are key words that will stop your thinking the way that it would normally go. Right, so the word itself is cutting that train of thought and injecting a different way. And so you, just by saying that to yourself, you will step back because you've already broken that normal pattern of thinking. So it's a fantastic thing to use, and we can use it in many different ways in our life. Circuit breakers, which are... key words. So for me, that naive inquirer think of curious and interested, right?
So how does it play out working?
Yeah, so when you feel yourself getting heated up, the thing would be to go, I'm interested about how I'm responding right now or how I'm feeling. Although I'm curious about how I'm reacting to this. I wonder what that's about, right? And so it's a wondering and a curiosity rather than getting, you know, and all the words come forward that you're getting, which is, I'll just say annoyed, but a whole lot of nastier words than that.
Yep.
More intense word, fired up words, right, that will engage you to respond in that way. So being curious and interested is the same as what this guy's doing. It's to take a step back and not be emotionally charged by this moment in time, right? And this takes practice, and obviously he's written about it because, you know, you do have to practice these tools. They don't just happen, they have to become part of your life.
Yeah, well, he's been quite a while working on developing his concepts and all that, and
I
think realised he had a book on his hands, so
yeah.
He played for the All Whites, the New Zealand football team, so he's experienced the pressure as well.
Using things in the moment to support ourselves, like I say, it's not our natural way. We haven't been taught this. We just respond. So it's not our natural way to think about trying to respond in a different way because we've been given free rein to respond how we want to. You know, all our boundaries are sort of gone about whether that is going to be helpful to respond like that or whether this is going to inform the situation more.
So when are we given free rein? Or are you saying that's what happens
ourselves,
to
us? We've just gone like this as human beings. We just react. We don't pull ourselves in. We don't take the responsibility to go, maybe I could reframe that a little bit, or, you know, we don't do that. We just go in for the kill, really.
Well, I tend to think it's slightly more complicated than that. I think people are trying to control themselves, but all they're doing is using willpower and holding in, and then suddenly they can't any longer. I think there's a lot of that, and then it just all bursts out.
Yeah, I think it's very much so close to the surface for so many people, Aaron, that we're all bursting out because everyone's feeling like their future is affected by the outcome of the elections, and that has a massive impact on people. So, yeah, they're emotionally charged about their opinions on who we should be voting for.
Well, I've been hearing the message, this is the most important election of our generation. Mm. And I'm like, that's the fourth one this generation so far. You know, sorry, it's the fourth time I've been told this in the last 30 years.
It depends on how long you've been alive for, eh? I mean, yeah. If you're only young, you might have heard that only once, but we've heard it a lot.
We've heard it a lot, yeah. We're kind of like, so, okay, sure.
Yeah, it will be what it's going to be. More about, you know, as hard as it might get at the top, it's more about how we respond towards each other, having to deal with that top layer.
And the politics is not the only thing in our life. It's given primacy, especially at the moment, because the news media is always talking about politics and what our political actors are doing. But there's so much more to our lives. Like, I keep thinking about it. We used to hear the stories of what communist Russia was like, and they might have been slightly propaganda stories, but let's just go with them, that it was very oppressive and no one had anything, and they lived in these grey buildings and like this. And I'm like, and it just sounds awful, but I'm thinking they still have little kids who are delighted at the world. They still fall in love and they still have families and mates and they still had vodka.
Yes, they did. And do.
Yeah. So, not that I'm advocating that, but I'm just saying, like, the social situations, all that stuff, which is a really important part of our life, of who we are, we don't think it's that important because it's not in the media all the time about that. But
yeah, we need to be careful, Aaron. We're influenced by all the things that are said over, obviously, the airwaves and on our TVs and anywhere we're getting information from. We're getting bombarded by a whole lot of negativity. I've kind of decided for myself a while back I wasn't going to listen to the news. I don't even know what's going on in the news. Naive, maybe, and people get annoyed that I don't know certain things are happening.
But here's the thing, right? You say it's naive in that context, and that's what they say. You're like, here's all the bad news. You have to watch it, otherwise you're ignorant, right? But it's not naive from this bigger perspective that you're talking about of our mental health.
Absolutely,
right? And our ability to operate in the world.
Yeah, if you're continuously hearing what's going wrong, it can't not affect you. You might think it's not affecting you, but it will be affecting you because you're hearing negativity, and our systems aren't built to be running on negative all the time. We must have input that gives us hope. Otherwise, we become negative in our speech and negative in how we respond to life around us. You know,
we
lose the spark.
I heard this great line the other day from someone who said, if it's in the news, it's not something you can do anything about. If it was something you could do something, if it's something you could have an effect on, it wouldn't have made it into the news.
Yeah, there we
right?
go.
It's, yeah, yeah. That's the definition of the news. Yes. The news, and what is the news anyway? It's some news. But, yeah, we keep talking about this all the time at the moment on the show about what the negativity does to our headspace and our mental health.
You can't over-talk this stuff because we've had so much talk, non-talk about our mind health and our humanity and being human and what it means to be human. We don't talk about it enough. And I've been thinking lately that here's one for the out of the box, Aaron. I think we're turning into cyborgs.
Because of all the devices we're...
Yeah, honestly, I really do.
That's what a cyborg is, though, isn't it? It's half human, half machine.
There we go. And how long have we been carrying phones around us to be connected to the world, you know, and everyone around us. It's a strange concept that we are falling into, but here we are and we've got to deal with it. And unfortunately, we are moving more and more away from our humanity and being human. And I have clients coming to me extremely stressed about the way the world is in the moment and things are going. And, you know, everyone wants the magic pill or the magic answer, and unfortunately there isn't one. And the answer that I do have is the one that people don't want to hear. And I'm going to give it to you. So here's the answer.
Here's the answer, folks.
You ready? You ready for the answer? Roll. Here's my suggestion to you, which you're not going to like. Choose a sunny day, because it's not nice doing this in a wet day. Choose a sunny day and head on down to the Wainui Reserve. Find yourself, maybe you want to take a blanket, I don't know, but no phone. And, yeah, could even leave your watch at home. That'd be good too. Head on down to the Wainui Reserve. Find just go off in the bush there somewhere and find yourself a nice spot where the sun is just absolutely beaming in. If you've got a blankie, put your blankie down. If not, just head on down onto that grass and lay down on there. And that's it. My advice to you is to let the sun warm your skin. Listen for the birds. Can you hear them? The tuis and the fantails and the great bird life. Oh, you might even hear the crickets. And if you look down, you might see some ants shuffling some leaves around. And there's some interesting things happening in nature when you start looking around and listening and tuning in. And so all of that is going to sound non-exciting for you and probably not something that you think is important enough to go and do. But that is the biggest pill that I could give you and the biggest advice that I can hand out is the most simplest thing to do, and that is to not have any interference with allowing your mind to just drift, daydream, listen to nature, and just allow it to infiltrate your being. And if you did that for 30 minutes and then headed back to your life, you ended that for a month and then did a record of how you felt at the end of it. So you are your own, when you're trying to, investigator. Oh, it's not the word I wanted, but anyway. And do your own work. And if you're feeling better, then that was the cheapest pill you could have taken and the less intrusive and the most healthiest you could do for your body and your mind and your spirit. So, yeah, I'm talking about getting back to daydreaming, allowing your mind to drift and being quiet and still and listening to nature, listening to the birds, listening to watching the things on the ground and what's happening on there and feeling the sun and... Yeah, there we go.
I think at the moment we've been given the opportunity to learn what's important by having this pile up of stuff that we must know what's going on in the news all the time. We've got a device, we're always paying attention to it, and
we're little cyborgs.
I mean, the thing is, like, the depressed mindset will say it's just going to get worse and worse, but actually this is how we've been taught that it's not the way. And I kind of had an early lesson because I was so involved in underground news and what's the truth and all that for so long. And it's only in recent years that and this is the thing I keep saying, that the news misleads you. Even if the news is factually accurate, it's still misleading you about the nature of the world because it's mostly negative stuff. Everyone's getting the chance to learn that now, and and people are looking out there and going, oh, everyone on Facebook is following these crazy charismatic characters and believing everything they see. And it might take a while, but I think we're all been given the opportunity to learn that that's not the way to live your life, and that what you were talking about as an antidote, that's actually more important. That's more important than knowing what's in the news today.
Yeah, it is. It really, yeah. I can't stress it enough. And as simple as it is, I bet you're going to find it extremely difficult to do. It's easier to go and pop a pill somewhere or, you know, do what we do to keep going Or maybe add more things in so we can even be busier. We might find many things to deflect away from an actual truth of what we need to do, and that is to be still. Let your thoughts be. You might find it a kind of a noisy place when you first start doing that, because it's hard to quieten down and listen.
It can be uncomfortable too if you're not used to it.
Very uncomfortable. I've suggested this to clients. It's very left field for them. They're very male, you know, and business orientated, hard workers.
Oh yeah, that's a challenge.
You know, it's you know, when I suggest going to Wainui Reserve and maybe finding half a dozen others that are sitting at Wainui Reserve.
It's like, oh, you must be Marie's client as well.
Sorry about that. But, you know, I'd be quite happy because, you know, because that's what we need to do. We need to ground ourselves, recenter, refocus, get back online, get some clarity back, so that we're not infiltrated with a whole lot of opinions and thoughts that actually don't relate to what we think and feel and are more other people's thoughts and feelings, you know. And we can't distinguish any longer what's what I think or what I, you know, because we lose our strength. We lose our ability to choose when we've got strong people around us telling us what to do. And then we just go, oh, okay, well, probably that's what I should do. And then you're unhappy with what you do, you know. So you've got to get back to yourself and be authentic and true to who you are, what you believe, what you know.
There's a lot of people saying that authenticity like thing is probably the most important thing for our health. If we're not actually being ourselves,
and we've been taught to not be for
chronic,
a long time.
Yeah, chronic health.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's challenging. Like I'm not criticizing teachers of 5 year olds, but when you're five, because they're just in the system. But when you're five and you're looking out the window and you see the playground, and you just want to go out and play as a 5 year old. It's the most natural thing, and you have to suppress it. Like, I'm not sure.
And our daydreaming, we've talked about that.
Oh, you get in trouble for daydreaming. Yeah, heaven forbid that you do that.
And that's where our mind health issues kind of start in many ways for a lot of people who haven't had the difficulties in life but maybe have had stresses as children. You know, when we daydream, it is the mind's way of relaxing, of letting things go. And it's actually taught out of us, and we're told it's a bad thing to do. Stop daydreaming, stop looking out the window. But however, many of us need to do that to relax. And so it's more about containing that daydream. So, you know, a teacher would be great, you know, allow the child to daydream and then pull them back when it goes too far, you know, because you can drift off.
Well, we've got to recognise that.
And you've zoned out.
You've got to I kind of put it like this, like humans are emotional machines.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't ignore the reality that you're dealing with some machinery where emotions are part of the wiring, and you have to account for them.
And it's like
you're not topping up the oil and the water in your car if you're not attending to that.
You've got your emotional well-being. What sets us apart from everything else is that we are emotional, and we do make choices and decisions based on our emotions. If we don't base it on our emotions, then it's more of a logical step, which is great. We can make choices and decisions out of when we're logically looking at a situation. But most of us actually make choices out of an emotional reaction. We either like and we want to do it, or we don't want to do it, and we'll fight against it.
Which brings us back to politics. And it's really easy to see the people on the other side saying, oh, it's clear that they're making the decision from an emotional place. But it's a lot harder to see it in ourselves, right?
I'm going to interject then, because I just want to throw this out there, because I think it's funny. I did ask Aaron, I wondered what Chris Luxton would look like if he had long hair. I'm quite interested because he, it's great and wonderful, but I'm just thinking he'd probably look quite hippie-ish. I might.
But there are no pictures of... I was hoping someone had actually made the image, like put a...
We give so much...
With Photoshop.
Oh, I don't know, at the end of the day, We are all human beings. We function, our body functions the same way as everyone else's, unless we've got, you know, disabilities and things like that. We could be a little bit different in how we function, but otherwise the body is the body. So we're just people at the end of the day, folks. Yeah, you know as much as you want to teach yourself.
There was one thing I wanted. We started off talking about, if you just tuned in, about how a lot of political decision making seems to come, people are in a state of anger as they're deciding things, which is not how we normally would like to run our life, but it seems to be how we're doing a lot of politics, not all of it. But a conversation with my daughter who's old enough to vote this year, and whether she's going to vote.
So is mine.
Your son.
Yeah, I just saying, so is mine.
Yeah,
oh
yeah,
gosh.
See, obviously, this is not a big priority for you. It's good. It's good. Well, it's good that you're not overwhelmed by it, but there'll be people saying, yes, and they get the message, it's very important to vote, very important to vote. And talking with my daughter, I realised, I think what might be happening, why young people have been put off voting, is our behaviour, because we'll get angry around politics as soon as we start. We demand that they vote, and then we demand to know who they vote for, and then we tell them why they're wrong. And the thing is, like, for 18-year-olds, like, they've just come through 18 years of been made to do things by angry adults, right? It's not your whole experience at that age, but there's this thing, you just want to get away from the adults who are angry, and now they're telling you have to get involved in politics where it's all angry adults just everywhere shouting at each other, getting pissed off.
Adulting is all about.
Yeah, and it's like, and it just, like, this has dawned on maybe that's the reason why our young people are not as into politics.
Don't want to look like us.
As older people. Yeah, why would you go there? Like,
exactly.
Like, if you're a kid and there's angry adults over there, which way do you go? Do you go toward them or do you go away from them?
No, we're heading out of there.
Yeah. And it's,
and probably wouldn't want to be involved in that kind
no,
of...
No, you steer... Yeah, if there's an angry adult, you steer well clear of it as
a
kid.
And the whole situation. So I probably wouldn't be interested in what they were interested in.
So
either.
I think... I don't know if I've cottoned on to something quite significant here. I haven't heard anyone say this, but maybe that's why... less young people vote, because it just looks like
It looks like old people stuff.
But it's more than that, Marie. It's like, it's really off-putting, right?
Well, you know, if you think about your younger years, you never wanted to do what the adults were doing, because, you know, that was old, you know, it was like old-fashioned. We want to start something new. So who knows what our young people are going to come up with that's left field from us. You know, but they're certainly not going to think about things the same way as we do. They're going to have a point of difference there. And yes, it is going. They are looking at us and our reactions and how we respond. And if it's in a way that they think is not cool, then they're probably not going to want to do what we're doing.
But it's not just cool, eh? It's not just about what's cool or not cool.
No.
It's about whether it's an inviting place.
Yeah. And do you think it is? I mean, even if you look at our adults being adults in the adult world, is it an inviting place to be in? Would you want to be there if you were a teenager?
So from that perspective, some things look inviting, like being a content creator on YouTube, being a sports star.
Yeah.
Like those are the things that look inviting.
Yeah.
You know, being a singer, being in a band. But a lot of the other stuff we do, thinking about it now, you've asked me that question, a lot of the other stuff we do doesn't look inviting, and politics especially doesn't look inviting.
Look inviting to a certain group of people who are built this way, okay? You will not get the ones who are the quieter ones, and you're probably never going to get that anyway, who may be just as informed or wise, speaking the way that you do an extrovert will. So you're never going to have a real view of intelligence because you're only ever going to get the certain type of person that will stand up to do that. The rest who are more introverted and quiet will do it more in their groups.
Do we have a problem with extroverts, Marie?
We do. I don't have a problem with it. I think we need extroverts.
You're an introvert.
Yeah, I'm an introvert. That can be an extrovert, but she's in hiding, and I'm not sure she likes being an extrovert that much.
From what people say who try to get into politics is that it's being an extrovert is not enough. You've got to be quite a forceful person.
Yes, and the personality.
And bullying kind of gets you places.
We have to have, you have, well, there's so many words that we can use. Thick skin, tenacity.
Thick skin equals emotionally insensitive.
Yeah, exactly. So let's, going to be honest about that. Yeah, you do need to be able to take the knocks, which means you don't let emotional reactions sway you. And you've had to learn to be not a certain way.
Not visibly, right? You want to look in control from the outside. So this
that takes a lot. You know, that's acting, Aaron. So really you're saying a person has to act to be a certain way so that we can inform people so they receive it. Because if we were to be, if we were to be real and go, actually, guys, this is really bad for us. Like, this is going to lead us in such a bad way. This is why we need to do it this way. We can't talk like that. We have to have certain language that informs people that we're intelligent by the words we use and the way that we structure it. So just going to get people like that, Aaron. You know, there's a certain formula that you have to have to be able to be in that position. So, you know, we put a lot of substance on something that really is an acting all the way, pretty much, to get to that place.
We started off talking about how coming from a place of, when you're in a place of anger or fear, it really narrows your focus, which like biologically that's what happens to our brain, or biologically anyway.
Well,
that's
no, the way we're physiologically.
Physiologically, yeah, that's what we're wired to do, is get a narrow focus in fight or flight. But I was just thinking there about, you know, you're saying someone become a politician, they have to act like they're under control.
Mm.
But they might still be angry inside, or angry and fearful, and they are making decisions on for our country, and it's just such a. I mean, I never watch Parliament. The rare times I see bits of it, it's just incredibly petulant, childish behaviour.
Well, I've said it before, Aaron, I'm going to say it again. We need checks and balances in our political arena.
And tell us what your checks and balances are, because it's not what other people say, but this is interesting.
Checks and balances are drug and alcohol tests. truly, I'm serious.
It's just funny, right? It's just funny. You know, drunk in charge of the country.
You know, yeah. like I can't believe it. We have it all in our police force and everything that holds substance in our system, checks and balances. There should be psychological tests before you even become a politician. You should be put through, well, I believe they need to be put through the psychological assessment to whether they are even up to that level of responsibility in their mindset. Mm. And then an evaluation on what do they do to support themselves afterwards.
Once they're in the job.
Yeah, like what are their support systems? How are they managing? Right, because that's never asked either. Cause you can't,
well, that's where the alcohol comes in.
I just don't know how you can handle that kind of stress. Go home and watch TV. It's just not. Well, it doesn't happen.
Well, they're also doing the busy ones, like the leaders are doing, like 16-hour days as well.
They are. So, what is their downtime? What are they doing? How are they managing that? And then going back into a full day the next day.
So they should have. You think they should have a counsellor on tap?
I think they should have a psychological assessment before they become a politician.
Yep.
Let's just put that there first. I'm quite strong on that one. And they should be having drug and alcohol, especially drug, and alcohol is a drug. So let's just say drug test just like every other work does. Whenever they want to. So if you're acting a bit strange, I might just test you out. You know what I mean? Like they do in work situations. If you're going a bit off centre, then maybe we'll pull you in and have a bit of a chat and sort of see where you're at the moment.
Who is the PM? Who does that chat?
Exactly. I mean, it's the most important job we've got going in our country, and yet it has the most least checks and balances.
Well, that's power. That's the nature of power.
But that's unfair to say it's the nature of power. It's only the nature of power because we allow it to be that nature of power.
Which is the nature of power that we allow?
We need to keep saying it. Where's your checks and balances? Let's inform us on your checks and balances. Like we have to inform you on our checks and balances to say that we can do a job. Because we've ticked all your boxes, right? So accountability, Aaron. We're not their subjects, okay? This is not our king and country. This is a politician who has come to a place where they are now in a place of honour in looking after this country, of stewarding it over us, right? So that should be a care factor towards us. We're not strong enough. We're not, as a voice, going, actually, you're here for us. And I know we say this. We're not here for you. You're here for us.
So you watch people, like people will complain, like Billy-O, about politicians. You put them in a room with one and they go quiet and they're very respectful.
Mm.
And it's just a reaction that they mostly get.
Well, that's all of that. There's nothing we can do about any of that. What we can do is check on mind health, whether you're up for the job, whether you can do the job. So don't give me your bachelor of something or your master's in something, because that tells me nothing.
Well, it tells you that too, you can study stuff.
Well, it tells me you can regurgitate what's been in history.
Yeah, so that, which is a very different job to being a leader.
That does not mean that when it comes to informed decision making that you have the ability to do that and you're not being influenced by something else in your life. So, I think it's just natural stuff to ask. Checks and balances, guys. Where is it?
All righty. Thank you, Marie. We've been talking to Marie, local councillor therapist, with her plan for how the Prime Minister should be controlled.
Well, should
not controlled.
Well,
controlled. No. Control is not word.
No,
the right
not.
Word. But
boundaries.
Boundaries. Yes. Guardrails.
I mean.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for coming in, Marie.
You're welcome.